Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And my guest this week is a woman I've been lucky enough to raise a glass or two with over the years, the epitome of ubiquitous. She's one of those rare people who can turn a hand to pretty much anything and do it really well, and with a smile on her face. I don't know how she does it. Most recently, she's co-created, written and executive produced, as well as starred in the Madame Blanc Mysteries, playing the wronged widow of a bigamist who turns detective. She's chilled us to the bone in drama Cold Call and hosted Game Show Tenable and a travelogue, which is on right now, Posh Sleepovers, in which she sleeps over in some of the country's most luxurious homes. After a brief fling with fame as a schoolgirl in the St. Winifred School Choir, performing on Top of the Pops with their number one smash hit single, There's No One Quite Like Grandma, she attended drama school at the North Cheshire Theatre School. But her big break came as Michelle in The Royal Family, followed by roles in Phoenix Nights and, of course, Coronation Street, Mount Pleasant, and still open all hours. In fact, her CV, like herself, is long and impressive. She lives with her husband, Steve White, one of the best drummers in the business, and their 11-year-old twin sons, Vic and Louis. A totally understated powerhouse. I cannot wait to talk to her. Let's dial her up. It's Sally Lindsay.
Hello, darling. That was very kind of you. I've gone all red.
Have I made you blush?
It made me blush. I'm not very good at the old hiding your light under the bushel. I'm very, very good at hiding my light under the bushel. I don't know why.
You really are.
Maybe it's a northern thing. I'm not sure.
Because most people would really sing and dance about this. I mean, you are literally the Reese Witherspoon of the North. And no one knows it.
I wish I had her legs.
So do I.
I wish I had her. I'm a big, big fan of Reese. I think she's one of my inspirations, actually. Her and Dolly Parton, Jane Fonda, all these amazing women that owned their own productions. And I think that's always been secretly in a dream of mine inside. And it, you know, came out last sort of when we formed the company 3 years ago, but to big fruition sort of last year. So, yeah, those women are absolutely, you know, trailblazers. And I just, we're standing on the shoulders of those giants, and Reese is just amazing.
But you are one of those giants. This is not your first rodeo as a show creator. It's not even your second. It's actually your third. And you don't tell anyone about it. And it's such a northern trait. You'd much rather I slag you off than compliment you. Because you'd find it funnier.
Yeah, I would find it funny if we were, you know, drinking, which we are. That's my humour, isn't it? You know, I quite like that. I think what it is, I think being in control has come from a different angle for me. I think it was more the fear of getting to be a woman of a certain age in this industry. And you know what I mean, Kate. And all these women, you know, I'm 49 this year. And being, if you're not on, yeah, we're exactly the same age, aren't we? I don't think we look too bad, actually, mate. You know what I mean?
Not with a filter. Not with a filter, it's lovely.
Yeah, but I think I come from a different angle in the fact that I was in fear of getting to an age where if I wasn't on a list of six actresses, then I wouldn't be working, which is ridiculous. Because if you're a man, the list is much bigger and you can be much older and you can have a lot younger women next to you. And it's still the same. And it really, really annoyed me as a feminist, I suppose. And it really got on my nerves. So I think that was where it came from when we formed the company 3 years ago. But it's been a joy ever since because we've really found out who we are really as a company.
All of this kind of takes me into the territory of my first question for you, Sel. So are you ready? Here it is, question number one. I wanted to know from you how you've managed to push these doors open. Because as you've just said, you know, telly works off a list. You've got to be on the list, right? And we've all been lucky enough, to be top of the list, right, over the years.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, more than most, this business has been incredibly good to us.
Absolutely.
But you're right. You get to a stage in life where you struggle to remain visible. And actually, people still need to be coming up from behind us. So I totally get that. Yeah. But how did you create this world of opportunity for yourself as a creator, an originator, a writer, a producer? Because I know it's not easy. So talk to me about how you push open those doors.
I think I had great training. I always say Coronation Street was my training. And I was lucky enough to work really hard, have the opportunity to work really hard. Because I think a lot of people, when they join Coronation Street, think it's all about being famous and being about, going to awards. And that's it, you're made. And you're not. You're really not. It's the most precarious job ever. Because every 1.5 years, a new producer comes in. And if they don't like you, you're out. And all of a sudden, you were that bird that was on the telly ages ago. You know, it's such a... So when I got the character, I was only given 7 episodes. That was all. It wasn't like a done deal that I was a new landlady of the Rovers. Absolutely not. But I worked so hard at those 7 scripts because I wanted it. I really wanted it. And I think it's having that sort of direction of taking every single opportunity you've got and ringing it raw, really. I'm not saying I've taken every opportunity because I would be superhuman. But I've taken most of them. And turned it into something else. But when it came to when I left Coronation Street and me and Saran, we were in the pub, there's a shock, round the corner and from Coronation Street. And what happened was she was working on a thing called Vincent, and she said, it's all very with Ray Winston, which was really good, but he said, it's all very well, but I'm literally running around in a skirt. That's what I'm doing, you know. And I said, it's just nonsense, isn't it? You know, at the time, this is like, God, what's 10 years ago now? No, it's longer.
Longer.
It's about 16 years ago when we first thought of it, because it's 16 years ago that, 15 years ago that I left, and that was the year. And essentially, I was obsessed with a program called Cagney and Lacey when I was a kid.
No, listen, I was right there with you. Mary Beth, Christine Cagney, cancer storyline, Harve. The knee-high boots with the midi. Oh, I mean, it was all of it, was it? And it was heartfelt. They were vulnerable, but kick-ass. Nothing else like that was on the telly. So no. I was obsessed with that as a teenager, actually. That's when I first discovered
it. Right. But
then after it was on, there was nothing else like it for years. And that's an opportunity you noted, right?
It was. We tried to, when we created it, I had to explain to Saran because she's 5 years younger than me, and so she just sort of missed it on the telly, like we'd seen it. But I was obsessed by the female issues. I mean, there was one scene, and I remember explaining to Saran when we wrote it, about when Cagney was in the toilets and she had a pregnancy scare. She'd had a one-night stand with someone. She had a pregnancy scare. And she'd come out the toilets and she was crying. I don't know if you remember this. And Mary Beth was there in the toilets, and she said, oh, are you crying? Are you pregnant? And she said, no, I'm crying because I'm not. And she said, oh, you want to be pregnant? She said, no, I don't want to be pregnant, but I know that I've only got 3 years left. And it was so profound. Even as a kid, I remember thinking, God, that's, men don't have to worry about that. And these women are doing this phenomenal job and all those issues.
Nothing really showed that at that time. We're going back a long time now, 20 plus years.
Yeah, or 30 it is. It's a long time ago. But it was trailblazing for me. And that's when we wrote Scott and Bailey together, because I was like, these issues are still happening. And why can't we have two very strong female leads, or even one very strong female lead? They've been prime suspect. There's been a few got through. But like the situation we're in now, Kate, I think, I can't remember the figures, but it's something like, it's disgusting that on primetime drama, not soap opera, that's 50% female writers. Primetime drama, there's still only something like 13 or 14% of female writers. It angers me to think, well, how can we tell the stories of women if there's no women there? They sort of let a few through, like, you know, Sally Wainwright, and, you know, we were phenomenal writers, don't get me wrong, of Kay Mellor. But then they go, right, well, look, there's women on, there you go, see them. But the rest
done.
Of them, yeah, we're not, yeah. We're token them. And they're not tokens, they're powerhouses of women, blooming out, they're unbelievable. You know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, we can't just go, oh, well, there's female characters on screen. You need them to be written well.
Of course.
And they should be narratives that are developed and scripts that are written by women. And it's really frustrating. It is, you know, it's not just about putting parity in the shop window. It has to be at all levels.
Of course it is.
It really does.
Totally
and
does.
And you know, without your star power, the doors that you've opened would never have opened, would they?
Not
without
in a million
somebody
years.
Going, I better see Sally Lindsay because she's a bit of a turn, bit of a celeb, you know?
Literally the when we formed Saffron Cherry, my friend Caroline Roberts Cherry, who is my business partner in our company, she'd been a top BBC exec for years. I mean, she'd done all sorts of stuff, won all sorts of stuff. And she was just sick of, you know, the big boys getting the jobs, the big boy getting the... So she set up her own company. And then she came to me, and we'd had a sort of a friendship over the years. Like, I always got on with her really well. And she said, look, I've got this idea, and I wondered if you'd be creative director. And I was like, oh, I'm just an actor. Women, again, putting themselves down. I'm just an actor, you know. And she said, no, you're not, because you've created Scott and Bailey. You helped create Mount Pleasant. I've always been central of every, even though I've been the lead and not paid for it, I've always been central in every production I've got, because I believe in setting a tone. You know, I think if the leads are not arseholes and they're completely, you know, equal and lovely and they get on with everyone, the show's just so easy, because everyone's like, oh, well, oh, it's great because she's not an arsehole, so I won't be. And it really is sets a tone.
It sounds naff, but it's great energy, isn't it?
It is. No, it's exactly great energy. And if you do it from the top, then it filters down. I've proved it over and over and over again. So she said, no, you've done this. And I was like, okay. And I thought, and she made me like think about it. So just think about it. We don't want you just, I said, oh, I'll just consult then. She went, no, I want you, we need to be part of it. So that was 3 years ago. And we've done quite a lot.
When you say you've done quite a lot, tell me what you've achieved in 3 years. I'm going to force you to hold your light up and dig it out from that bushel.
Well, we create Saffron Cherry, but we've got about, I'd say, 20 really strong dramas on our slate. We've also got 5 in very deep development. There's one that's about to go that we're very excited with the BBC. Obviously, I co-created and co-produced Madame Blanc, which is on your tellies, that I'm in. We did a documentary about Emmeline Pankhurst, which is obviously very important to me, Mancunian hero. We've got a children's programme, which has just been recommissioned, and we've sold it to France and Wales. And that is called Grandpa, The World According to Grandpa, in which I voice Halifax the Rabbit. And it's a very, she's the clever one in it. She had to be female and she had to be clever, because another thing is, and we've got boys, Kate, but most protagonists in kids' programmes, something like 80% are boys. So there's hardly any girls that are the clever ones. Drives you insane, doesn't it? When you look at the figures, when you open the books, it's a door it's a door you can't go back through, and it fires me and Caroline every blooming day. So Yeah, so she's, and it's brilliant. It's Don Warrington and a gorgeous collection of grandkids, and it's this really successful kids program, informative. So that's just a few things we've got, but we've got
Hold on a sec, right? Sorry. In 3 years, the world's been through a pandemic.
Yes,
you've only just got started before the world stopped, right? But despite all of that, you have done. I mean, look at that. Look at that slate. 20
Alone.
Dramas, five yes. in deep development, a kids series up and running and away. Madame Blanc, not just on our screens here. Actually, you've sold it to America as well.
Sold it around the world. Acorn TV. Yeah.
I mean, like Reese Witherspoon, Sally Lindsay. You tell me the difference because
billions,
you're doing
billions
it.
Of pounds.
And do you know what? I've trawled the internet to find anywhere where you have just owned your success like that, and it doesn't exist. So
this is the first time ever.
It is, and I'm just so bloody proud of you because you're a grafter, Sal, and you're lovely.
Yeah, you're a grafter
and
though.
Smart.
You've always been a grafter, Kate, and I've always been massively impressed with your career because if the opportunities weren't there, you made them.
I make them.
You make them, and we're exactly the same in that way because you no one is ever good. And what's been so wonderful about Madame Blanc is we've almost found an audience that was forgotten. So
totally.
Really, you know, because I wrote it, it's mostly female. If nobody's watched it, I'm not going to do a spoiler. There's lots of girls in it. Let's put it that way. Jean's this amazing power. She's very normal. And what I wanted Jean, the character, to be is absolutely bright as a button in her field. She's never had kids. I wanted that to be really important because she didn't want them.
Yeah. Because she was busy with her career, which she loves.
And I dealt with that in one sentence. You know, in case anyone was worried about it, which the people are about you having kids. And so I changed the sort of the narrative of women. So most of the murderers are women, you know, the dealers are women. And even though I've written the men really, I think they're really balanced, and I like writing men actually, because I surround myself by good men. And I wanted it to be non-complicated either, because there's always like, male detectives have all got a maverick side, and they're antisocial, and they drink too much, or they've got a drug problem, or, you know, they can't develop relationships. And she's like, no, I'm actually fine. I'm just really clever. And what's been brilliant, though, which was our passion, was to put LGBTQ couples on screen, to put different diversity races on screen, different languages on screen, different ages of women and sizes on screen, right in the middle of the Saturday night schedule. Make it
9
normal.
O'clock Saturday night. Yeah.
Make it normal, because if you put it there and it's in a normal genre, like mystery detective, people like me on the telly, which is lovely, and you make it normal, people don't think, oh, I'm watching. It's like Death in Paradise is such an amazing maverick thing. Mm-hmm. How many times have you seen that many amazing black people in the same show on British television? Never. You never used it. Obviously, May I May Destroy You and all these amazing things that have come up. But literally, that's been on our tellies for 11 years. And it's, you know, it's such a maverick show and a game changer. And people don't see that because, it's this nice, normal show we see on a Saturday night. But that's how you do it, I think.
The frustrations of getting a show away. I mean, when people see a new series arrive on air, they have no understanding about the blood, sweat, tears, and the time, right, that goes into it. You talked earlier about creating Scott and Bailey with Saran Jones, who you'd met on Corrie, and she was a co-star that you got talking to after work in the pub. You came up with Scott and Bailey and you started pitching it. For 6 years, you pitched it. Alongside that, for 5 years, you were also trying to get Mount Pleasant away, which you'd also worked on and helped to create.
Yeah.
Then they both get commissioned. And what happened?
I got pregnant with the twins. So in the same week, they both got commissioned. After 6 years. And we'd been trying for 6 years as well. It was the really weirdest thing. And this is the weirdest thing, Kate, and you know more than anyone, that your best production ever for me is my twins. There's nothing. Everything's just a bonus after that. I'm not really asked. It's lovely telly, and it frustrates me, and I love it, and I'm passionate about it. But at the end of the day, it's about the boys, always has been. And so I got pregnant with the boys, and then there was this amazing, beautiful maverick producer called Stuart Murphy, who was the head of Sky One at the time, and he said, "Well, it can't be anyone else, so I'll just wait for you." This was from Mount Pleasant. ITV didn't. they wouldn't wait for me to play Janet. And In all honesty, I said to Saran, Saran's still my best friend now. I'm ringing her straight after this, actually, because we've got an hour. Woohoo! But I said to her at the time, look, mate, you've got to make it. You can't not make it. And, you know, and she was like, oh, I don't want to without you. And then Leslie came along and she was phenomenal. And she put a completely different tone on it than I would. And it worked, obviously, brilliantly. So, you know, and I did do a little bit in it now and again, but it was an example that they weren't going to wait, you know, because I was pregnant. So that counts as, tough, basically. But Mount Pleasant wasn't. So Mount Pleasant did. Stuart and Lucy Lumsden, they said, no, there's no one else can play it. We'll wait. And the boys were 4.5 months when I went back to work. We'd moved up to Manchester. Steve was with me. We had my mum, all my family. We had, we had paid for a nanny. This is another thing that that women do. They pretend they don't have childcare. And you're like, well, what do you do? Just leave them in a drawer with a bag of fish fingers behind the clock. Of course you've got a bloody, you know, it's like this dirty secret that you have for other people looking after your kids. And like, oh, why do you think I bloody work? You know, it drives me insane. So that's how we did it. And it was great. And they were great. It was fantastic. It ran and ran.
And you know what, though? You need people. I know Stuart Murphy. Stuart Murphy now runs the English National Opera.
Yeah.
For a job for which he had very little qualification beyond passion. <No.
laughs> He's just an amazing man.
He is an amazing man. But you need somebody like him to take a punt, to go, no, it has to be you, Sally, and we will wait, and that's going to be fine. And I think sometimes our industry has lost a lot of those people.
Oh, totally.
And they're the ones that change the game, you know.
And I think a lot of lessons can be learned, but, you know, so I'm so lucky to be sort of in that stable at the moment with Channel 5, so it's great. I mean, obviously, I work for other channels, and we pitch to other channels, of course we do, and we've got lots of brilliant contacts in other channels, but at the moment, for me personally, on screen, that's sort of where it's happening.
But you know what? It works because they put great faith in you, and they get a return on their investment. Madame Blanc Mysteries does 2.5 million viewers on a Saturday night. That is punchy for any channel. And for Channel 5, that's fantastic. And that's the only reason that an audience will come to that in the first instance is either because they love crime or because they love you.
Well, yes, I think you're right. I think Channel 5 audience do really like watching me. But also, I think it's found a home. How can I describe it? It's found a home in the fact that those people who don't want these really hard-hitting dramas anymore, they don't want to watch something that's pushing the envelope. They've had enough of that. That life, real life, is hard enough. The nonsense that's going on in our country is horrendous. And they just want the hour where they can sit down with a glass of wine and go, right, what's Jean doing this week? Oh, that's Antiques Nice. Yeah. Just that,
it feels
really
to me, it feels like Morse or Bergerac, but with bra straps.
Basically, that's it. I love that description. You're absolutely right, Kate. That's it.
Because with Bergerac, you used to see Jim Bergerac, who I fancied so bad.
Oh, yeah. I totally fancied
so
him.
So fancied John Nettles.
Totally
you see him
fancied
sort
him.
Of just driving around Jersey in a Jag, and it was calm and beautiful. It was a lovely, gentle escape. It would be a crime. It wouldn't be too brutal. It would all get tied up at the end of the hour. Bob's your uncle, Fanny's your aunt. Job done.
Basically, customers, I call them customers or viewers, really discerning about crime, and they get really angry if it's wrong or if it's too easy. They get really annoyed. So I was so nervous about that aspect of the, you know, because I've never written crime before. I've written comedy, I've written drama, I've never written crime before or murder mystery ever. So another woman I look up to very much is Dawn French, and she wrote in did an interview. I love Dawn. Oh,
she's so clever, isn't she?
So
she's
clever.
She's just so, and so lovely clever. With it.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to be an arsehole. You can just be a really nice person and brilliant as well. And she said something in an interview once I've never forgotten. And she said when she started a novel, and she was quite low because I think her and Lenny were splitting up. And she said it was just baby steps. I thought I'll just do it one step at a time. And then all of a sudden my legs got stronger. And I started to walk, you know, and then I started to run. And I thought, right, because when we got Madame Blanc was commissioned really quickly, Which never happens. I've just said six years for each of the other
female. And that's kind of average. That's about average, isn't it? You know, that's not. It's not fast or slow.
It's not fast. It's not, honestly, for female-led stuff. Yeah, definitely. You have to convince them. I mean, I've been in commission. I mean, you're bringing it all, but I've been in meetings when they've gone, yeah, we've got something about sisters. You know, like.
Well, oh, all right then. We'll leave that, shall we?
We've got like a, you know, we've got women in that one. And you're like, this is genuine stuff. Not so much nowadays. I've got to say, things are slowly changing. But you just think, oh, God, you know, oh, here we go. But that's in the past. I think it is changing. I hope it's changing. It is for me anyway. But yeah.
But you're making it change. And that's the whole point of what you're doing, is that you're doing it like Dawn. You're going in and you're not trying to take over the world. You didn't have a great big whiteboard in your office with sort of world domination strategy written up. You're just doing it project by project whilst getting home in time to feed the kids, see Steve, make parents' evening, all the stuff that we do alongside that.
Yeah,
And I think you are faultless in everything you do, with the exception of telling people about everything that you do.
I should do a big sort of cover of some magazine, shouldn't I, and say, look, I'm ace. But I always feel a bit of a dick doing that. So,
I understand that as well. But, you know, hopefully as a mate.
This is all right. I don't mind talking to you about it, because we're not that dissimilar, to be honest, Kate. But one thing we are very passionate about across the line with Saffron Cherry is the fact that it's female-led. We try and use as much female crew as possible as we can. So it's because I think you've got to put people in place, as opposed to let them, oh, the best people. No, that's not right. You need to put the women in place so they can work hard and be brilliant.
And also promote up, right? So that if you're looking for a good DOP, but you know that, and you, they've never DOP'd before, but actually, you know, they can do it. Elevate.
I mean, we're all about that. We're all about, you know, for example, for Grandpa, we need a new director because Alex is doing something else. And we've insisted that it's a female director. And it's so weird because we got hundreds of, you know, loads of male applications and hardly any women, because they'd never done animation before, or they'd never done. And we were like, we don't care. It's all right. Yeah. And then they all flooded in. Oh, all right, that's then, good. If you don't mind. Because men will go, yeah, I can do it. And you get there and they literally can't. You know, but then you'll get, not all men, obviously, my DOP, Madame Blank, is one of my dearest friends. He's absolutely, that's why he's made it look so amazing. I knew he would. So don't get me wrong. I absolutely love men. I absolutely love them. The ones I love. But having said that, you know, you've got to go down that and pull them up. Yeah. And if you're not pulling people up, then how do we keep this industry going?
You just congest the route to the top, don't you? And we need to keep that traffic flowing.
Absolutely. And what's really lovely at the moment, being a, like, you know, 49 this year and being in the industry so long, is just how many female focus pullers there are, which means in about 5 years' time, there's going to be loads of DOPs, loads of camera people, camera women. And I love that. You can see it happening. You know, in the sound department, there's women assistants now, and that never happened when I started. No. So you can see it coming through slowly, but you can see it, and that we're all here for encouraging that big time.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Now, my next question to you is about posh sleepovers. I mean, it's a dream ticket of a job. You
nonsense.
Get to road test.
It's complete nonsense, isn't it? Complete nonsense. It's, I love it.
But it's voyeurism at its best, right? It's you road testing luxury across the spectrum. But having seen how the other half live, I want to know from you, as an inherently working class girl, what turned your stomach about a life of incredible wealth and privilege, and what turned your head?
It's very interesting because this season, it's all been about, I really wanted to see women that had, again, women that had made their own wealth. So it's very hard for me to say that any of them turned my stomach really, because they'd worked, a lot of them came from where we were from. There's two that came from nothing. There's two that came from, they had inherent wealth, but not a lot, and they made something out of it. Mm-hmm. And then, yes, there's two that, yeah, I mean, Seema, I did. You've not seen it yet. She's from nothing. She's from a market stall.
Is Seema the lady that's gone on with her family to create Forever Unique?
Yes. So we do Seema.
Well, she's so lovely.
Yeah, she's amazing.
I mean, the wealth that they've accrued is incredible, but it's hard, it's bloody fought.
And she flogs and flogs. So they are and very family orientated. I suppose the one thing that I could never really get my head round, and I still can't get my head round with these people, even though I absolutely got on with everyone, is how you can send your child away to school.
To boarding school.
Yeah, that's something. And I know people love it and people do it and it's wonderful. And I would never dispute anybody's choice of doing it. I mean, I have to work away. I've had to learn. I mean, I know Angie Griffin, when she was on Mount Pleasant, we talked about this at length, about how you have to sort of go into a different place when you go to work as a woman, because as a mother, because you are away. Now, I'll tell you the most horrific thing, the best thing and the horrific thing last year. So we filmed Madame Blanc in Malta, and I had to be away from the boys. I thought it was 4 weeks. 4 weeks, I thought, I got my head around it. Then they were coming out for a week, filming another 2 weeks. They were coming out for the half term, and I'd planned it all. All of a sudden, Malta was on the red list. So wow. I was away from my boys for 10 weeks.
Oh, Sal. Oh, even so, just like, I just swallowed a tear for you. Yeah.
And when I found out, and it was really funny because on the week they were coming out, and I'd gone 4 weeks, and I had to isolate for two of them, and then it was only 2 weeks start working, so it was all weird. All the rules was changing every day. So I said to Steve, I've got to go 2 weeks early. He was like, right, okay, you know, and he's amazing. So they were coming out on the fourth week, and then what we were hearing in Malta, everyone was getting really excited. The crew were buying presents for them. I found this amazing villa. I was so excited. Dermot had made it a little bit of an easy week. You can't have an easy week when you're execing your lead and the writer, can you? Because that's ridiculous. But no. I'd had a little bit of time, and it was just horrific. And then all of a sudden, Steve said, look, my writing partner, Sue Vincent, was in the next room to me, and she's in the show as well. And he'd rang Sue up and said, look, I don't think she understands that we're not coming. Because I kept saying, no, it's fine, honestly. It's all set up, it's fine. So I was almost in denial. And Steve literally had to ring Sue and say, you're going to have to go in because I don't. And that day, I had the day off. And I lay in, and I just went, this is not worth it. This is not worth it. And I nearly went home. And I didn't, obviously. I didn't, obviously, because I had 100 people that were relying on me for their, you know,
Lightning
and I had this this drama to make that I'd written, and it was fine. So going back to your answer, what turns your stomach? That turns my stomach, because I know what happened, and that 10 weeks is a normal term to send him away. Do you see what I mean?
God, yes.
I can't get my head around that. I had a funny week when I came home, because I was like, I kept waking up in the middle of the night thinking they were going to, you know what it's like with your kids when you, but like, I can't get to them. They've been run over. Yeah. I can't get to them. Every night.
Anxiety dreams. Oh, anxiety dreams.
So that's the thing I would say. Okay.
So that, then, so that's those lifestyle choices. But what about things like, so in one of the earlier episodes, you, the six-story townhouse in Mayfair with the lovely guy, what was his name?
Cam.
And his younger, very beautiful girlfriend, who was also lovely. But yeah, they took you to try some caviar and it was like 1,600 quid a pot. And then before they went out for dinner one night, they had a couple, I mean, literally two or three friends over, and they spent a grand on flowers, yeah, just nonsense, for the drinks, for the hour. And then they went, you're not going to stay in this house, this six-story townhouse, right? We've got a guest house around the corner. How much was that guest house?
32 million. I mean, it's nonsense, like, Kate. It's nonsense. It's
and
nonsense.
And then you went to one of the beautiful country homes. So this is the story of inherited wealth in Devon. And this beautiful house. And the people there were, again, lovely. And I could see you trying to sort of grapple with, well, what is inherited wealth? And understanding that being born into privilege doesn't make you a bad person. Of course it doesn't. But yeah, what do you do with it? What do you actually do with it that actually what's elevates really, it, means something?
It's so interesting because I just go in like, the people are people and we get on with it. Else I couldn't do it. What's interesting about those people, like I've just done, that was last week, that was Schoon Castle. And that was Uggborough, wasn't it? Mm. That was last season. What's interesting about those people is they're born into it, yes, but it's not a given. So if they don't make money on that estate, then it's they gone. Are responsible for losing the line. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's all they think about. And those two, like William last week and Alex the time before, they are the I mean, it's dead ridiculously sexist. Like, they're the oldest sons and all that nonsense. So it goes to them. Mm. But both of them have taken on the mantle. But both of them were given the choice not to, which was interesting. It's not a, nowadays, it's not a given. And it's just really interesting that they work really hard to try and find ways to earn money. Like in Schoon Castle last week, half of it is hideout for accommodation. There's a gift shop. There's like tours going on. There's, you know, they have to make money, else it goes into disrepair. Yeah. So they feel, both of them, it's the same story from both of them. It's really interesting. They feel like they are caretakers for the next generation. Yeah. They don't feel they own it. They feel they're, I mean, it's amazing to sort of run around this
place. Well, they're kind of leaseholders, aren't they?
Yeah, they don't feel that they own it. They feel like they're privileged to, it's dead weird.
Caretake.
Yeah, caretake. They don't, you know, those really, really posh people. I'm not talking about, you know, your Boris Johnson class and all them arseholes. I'm talking about the really, really posh ones, you know, that have inherited it. And this is it. We've got to, this is it. I'm like 400 of the generation, you know. It's quite a pressure for them, really. I mean, they don't have to.
Well, they might feel the weight of some responsibility to keep it all going. And I mean, what if you're born into that? And you decide, actually, I want to be a doctor, or I just don't want to live in a big house, or I don't want to live in this country. That's a,
I think it does
it takes
happen.
A lot of choice. Does,
I mean, Alex from the last year, he was in a bar in Australia drinking shots, and his dad said, I think it's time you take over. And he's like, what? And he was like 27. He's like, no, I'm not ready. And it took him 3 years to get home, to get his head around it. And then he was like, right, okay, I'm ready now. But I said, God, that's a... I suppose there's some advantages in knowing what you're going to do since you're a little boy or girl. Because Steve, my husband, knew he was going to be a drummer from the age of 8. And I always think, God, that's a right relief, isn't it? When you know what you're going to do for the rest of your life, because there's nothing else. I didn't. I had no idea. No, I did it. It was an accident. I got into acting at university by accident. Somebody asked me to be in a play. And I was just better than everyone else. I went, oh, God, this is weird. You know, I find this really easy. Oh, my God, I can do something. Literally, that's how it happened. Whereas some people just, you know, totally fell into it. I've fallen into everything.
But isn't that glorious? That you've
You
know, that's lovely.
It's taking opportunities again, Kate. So that back then I thought, God, if I can really act, what if I can? Ooh. And I just gave myself 5 years. And I thought, if I'm really rubbish and I've got a job, then...
See what happens.
See what happens, yeah. I've got nothing to lose. That's me all over, really.
That's the bit we have to hang on to, I think, throughout our lives. And that's the bit I will always drill to my son, is you have nothing to lose because you've always got this to come home to. You can always come home to me. There is nothing to lose here. Go and be brave.
Be brave. It's about being brave, yeah. I think. And just, you know, what's the worst can happen? And you know, and I know, like, I've had shows cancelled and, the ground, when I left Coronation Street, I was supposed to be going into a big comedy drama, and I was supposed to be going on a tour afterwards, and both were cancelled within the same week.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, God, I'm going. And I thought, if I look back now and I go back, that's it, I'll be there forever, which is nothing wrong with that. But I just thought, I've just got to keep walking on and be brave and see what happens. Awful. I've been in the same situation you have, and it's just getting yourself up and going, right, keep walking forward.
It's the making of you, though. I mean, it felt like the end of the world, but it was the beginning of a whole new world for me. You learn far more from those moments than you do from standing on a podium at the BAFTAs trying to figure out who to thank, which actually takes me nicely to my final question for you. I wanted to put you on the podium at, figuratively speaking, in, say, the BAFTAs, right?
Right.
You're being recognised for an incredible body of work, a lifetime of work.
Oh, wow.
As you stand there and recount and thank those that have helped you to achieve this magical moment, who are those people that you're name-checking, and why have they been so significant in you hitting those key milestones?
Oof. Gosh, that's a big question. Well, the first person that comes to mind, beyond a shadow of doubt, is Steve, my other half. Steve is like, I know he is one of the best drummers in the world, and he's got this amazing body of work. He's done the music on Modern Blanc, which is great. He loves doing telly music now. So he's like, oh, I love it. But
that's so good. So Steve, definitely. Steve, I mean, as well as being all of those brilliant things, he's just a really nice man, isn't he, Sal?
He's a good man, and he's a good man, and he's funny, and he's hilarious, and I fancy him, and he loves his boys, he loves our older two as well, Christabel and Curtis. He loves all his children. He's a big, big family man. That's all that matters to him. And I've never had to do this big thing. Like, my friends go, oh, I had to leave him a big list, and he got it all wrong. And this was a right mess when I came in. And you're like, well, why have you married a dickhead then? what have you married then? You know what? I literally walk out the door. I don't have to tell him when it's, you know, game, when it's PE. He knows, because we bring up the kids together.
Together.
And he's unbelievable. Well, he's probably, when I'm working, the main caregiver. This is what annoys me about interviews, which is amazing. It's probably the first interview I've ever had, Kate, ever in my life, that the female and male has said, how do you juggle being such a busy woman and somebody looking after your kids? This is the first interview I've ever had that you've not asked that. And thank you for that.
Well, do you know why I don't ask? Because I'm sick of being asked it myself.
This is it. It's like, shut up.
As a single parent, how do you do it?
A single parent, yeah.
Well, I just make it work because you have to. It's not easy. You're spinning at multiple plates, but that's,
well,
that's,
I mean,
every
single parent. Single parent is like, I don't know how you do. I mean, you're amazing. Absolutely amazing, because I do rely on Steve a lot. So going back to your...
No, but listen, you know, equally, if I need to go away and work, my parents just pack a bag and move in while I'm away.
Amazing.
So I have that...
You've got that support network.
Unconditional love for him, and unconditional support and love for me too. So actually, you know, that's my Steve.
Yeah, yeah. So
I'm so lucky to have it. And, you know, so lucky to have that.
Yeah. So Steve, definitely. Who else? I think my family, my mum and everyone, all these... mum and my stepdad, who were brilliant. And I've got a very strong northern family. And they're always massively supportive of everything they do. You know, they think it's ace.
Do they turn up to some of your shows like mine used to on minibuses? Like, hiya!
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Really excited.
So I've not done much theatre since the boys. But I've done panto a couple of times, and that's definitely happened. Mm. And they're just like, it's amazing. It's fantastic. Or they've come into audiences I've done, which is lovely. I've got a lot of friends that have been amazing over the years as well. All my friends are fabulous. I'm really into friendship. It's very important to me. Mm. I think that's the backbone of any person, really, is the friends they keep. And totally. I've got some great ones, you know, in this industry and not. I mean, my best friend from school I've known since I was 11, Claire. So, and she's a very successful CEO of a company, but she's ace, you know, she's from, we've got similar backgrounds, and all my mates in the North, I love them to dearly. So then, and then who else? Gosh, it's really hard, this one.
Who cast you in the royal family? Because without the royal family, you would never have got Corrie. But actually, wasn't it the Alan Bennett Talking Heads play that you'd done previous to that made Caroline and Craig want to see you for the royal family?
Well, it didn't happen like that, actually, Kate. It has been retold like that. But what happened was, I was with, actually, Melody. That's who Melody's not with us anymore. Unfortunately, she died in the pandemic, far too young. She wasn't even 70. But anyway, but she was my agent for 20 years. She was amazing. What she did, she took me. She said, I don't understand why you're not bigger. And she's just set her own company up in Manchester. So she put me in front of all these casting directors in Manchester. Literally, I was a 24, 23. And she was putting me up for parts of like 17-year-olds. And honestly, God, Kate, I've always looked every year of my age. I've never been like, oh, she can get away with young. Never. I look every year of my age. I'm quite proud of it. And so I was like this sort of big doofus walking into sort of, you know, to a little 17-year-old part. And then she's like, what are you doing here? But what she was doing was getting my face out, because my agent before was just appalling. And I'd been in this theatre show for like 18 months, just stuck in this show. Anyway, so she got me out there. And then she said, right, we're going to set up a night. She said, I'm going to put it on the credit card. So she set a night up with a few other people in her agency. And she invited all the fantastic, of which there still are, Northern casting directors to this night. And I think that was the night that changed my life, really, because her doing that, because everybody else, I was match fit because I'd been in theatre for sort of 18 months. And everybody decided to be do this really, really dramatic crying kind of thing. And I didn't. I did an excerpt from Her Big Chance, Alan Bennett. So I wasn't actually in the play, but I just did a section.
I see.
And my mum said, my mum obviously was there. Mum said that, she said it was the weirdest thing because everybody was sort of like getting a bit bored with everybody coming out crying, talking about, you know, this, that and the other. And then I came out and brought the house down with this 2-minute piece. And she said the casting directors were just getting the books, like, and get the pens out and marking. And that was it. So then the next day I was in the royal family.
Did you realise that night was so significant at the time?
I think I did, because when I came, because the audience reaction was so massive. And then I came off stage and we went to this blessed Melody. She just spent all, you know, got this credit card. And there's a big buffet going on and champagne, because she went, casting directors will always turn up to a drink, you know. And she was right, they did.
She's right.
And so it was all fabulous in this, you know. And I must have it about these sort of imaginary people that you don't think exist. And all these casting directors, there's about five of them, came over to me and said, oh, well, I've got this idea for you. Can I see you for this? And what do you want to do? And it was like, it was mad. So that, don't get me wrong, it didn't just happen like that.
No.
But that was the night, the next day I was in the royal family, because they wanted an unknown, you see. And June West was the casting director, who was amazing, June. And she put me in Coronation Street as well. And June West said, I think I've got Michelle for you. So I wasn't even seen by Cassie and Caroline. I just turned up.
Wow.
They just went, oh, all right then. Well, we trust you. And I just turned up.
Because our careers are like dominoes, right? You need to flick the first one for the rest to all fall into place.
Absolutely.
And start tipping. That was the first tip of your domino, yeah?
Absolutely. No, without a shadow of a doubt. And Melody and June West made that happen, without a shadow of a doubt. So I'd have to thank both of those people.
And then we've also acknowledged across the course of this chat, Stuart Murphy being so significant, and most recently Ben Frow at Channel 5.
Yeah.
But who else were the change makers for you?
Well, I think Caroline as well, Caroline Roberts-Cherry, who's my other half, because she was really insistent that I be part of this company. And she was really insistent in giving me the confidence of doing it, really. And then I would never have done it without her.
You would be waiting for roles to become apparent that you could then test for, and you might get them, you might not. Now, there's a different energy around your career. You're doing
totally.
It.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think I would have always written and pitched. I think that's something I do anyway. But I would always, yeah, but that as well. So I think Caroline, I've got, thinking about it, I've got to thank her because she kept on at me, really.
And also, well, that's brilliant, right? But also, I mean, some of the women that you've written alongside, always co-stars. You're a brilliant collaborator. Yeah. Saran was the first.
Yes, yeah, Saran. And do you know what's brilliant about having Saran as your best mate? Is that we call it moaning about the best job in the world. You know, because sometimes you have some bad days on set and sometimes you have some great days on set. And honest to God, if the papers could get a hold of what we took, it would be like, you know, gold dust. But not that we just, and we talk about family and we've done things together so much, you know, from being Karen and Shelley in Coronation Street and just doing stuff. You know, I had my kids first and she had her kids and she met Lawrence at my wedding. And I don't know if you know that. She met her husband at my wedding.
I didn't know that.
Also, I think another person work-wise, Tony Wood, who was, he was the executive on Coronation Street at the time. Mm. And he, the last 2 years, and he was the one that really, really, you know, pushed me to do the Charlie Shelley storyline. And he really, you know, put me right centre middle. So that year when we were winning all the awards, you know, I was accepting the BAFTA, I was accepting all sorts of stuff because he put me front and centre. So that was an amazing thing. I suppose it's like you say, it's, I mean, I'd have to go over, I don't want to really miss anyone out.
I know, it's really hard, isn't it?
People
it's really hard.
That have put you, like my agent now is fabulous. She's an unbelievably strong woman. And it was a hard act to follow Melody and she's done it brilliantly, Jeanette. And she's always on my side and she's always, you know, I mean, I'm a different person than most of her clients because I have charity work. I do documentaries. I do, like you said, you know, she got the call from Tenable going, do you fancy doing this? And I was like, what? All right, you know, but what's the worst can happen?
You were the caretaker of Tenable, which is a daytime quiz show, stepping in for Warwick Davis. He was off doing a movie, I think, wasn't he? Is that right?
Yeah, we filmed it half an hour because he'd scheduled just gone mental. So he was doing Willow, so he just couldn't do it all. But they had the commission, and so they just said, "Do you fancy doing it?" Because I'd done a few pilots for game shows before, and they'd worked really well, but the game shows were too complicated. So I think they knew I could do it, but I didn't know I could do it. I mean, it was an established show. It was mad, but I loved it. I loved it. I'd do it again tomorrow. I love a game show. Yeah.
And also, you know, how brilliant that you do all of these things and you don't apologise for it, because we are conditioned to apologise for travelling outside of our lane here.
We're not allowed in the States.
Everyone does it. Everyone does it. You can write a book. You can host a show. You can be an actor.
Kate, I swear to God, that is exactly what I think. And yeah. I look over to those girls over in America and I just think, well, why can't I? You know, you've got someone like, who I love Bradley Walsh. You've got someone like Bradley Walsh who does everything and everyone goes, oh, that's amazing. If you do it, they're like, oh, a bit, well, aren't you an actor though? Yeah, I'm really good.
Come on,
good
make
one.
Your mind up. Which one are you?
I'm a really good one, but I can do that as well. Oh, I don't know. It's changing. I think it's changing because more of us are doing it, but not quick enough for my liking, really.
Yeah.
But then you've got the other side of the coin. Is that, you know, a lot of actors that women actors that have gone over there, personalities have gone, you've got to lose half your body weight. So there's that other side of the coin, whereas English people, which is thank God, like to see normal people on the telly. They don't think it's weird. Whereas in America it's quite odd. I remember when I was when I first went, because I've always been sort of size 14. I suppose behind the bar I was like 12, 14. Now I'm 14, 16. Always been. And my family, our mum, grand, whatever. And I can imagine I could lose it, but I've never been asked, to be honest. and no one's ever really asked me. But when remember when I was first behind that bar, Kate? And there was a journalist, I probably shouldn't say who it was, I don't know if he works anymore, and he did wrote an article in a well-known newspaper saying, how can they put this fat, ugly woman behind in such a glamorous role? So I was 26, very vulnerable, didn't know anything about the industry at all. I'd done one big job, I'd done little jobs, but I'd done one the Royal Family before, and that's what he said. And it was two pages of this. And I remember reading it, and it was my brother. I was living with my brothers. I'm very close to my brother. And I was reading it, And I read everything then. Obviously, now you don't give a monkey's, do you? But then I read it and I was like, what? I couldn't get my head around it. I'd never even thought about my weight before then.
I mean, that makes me really angry. For a start, nothing like that would ever be published in a newspaper today, but it can live online. I mean, you can see what the bloody
hell
you like.
There was a few mirrored images. There was a few that I did when I did a big campaign, and I was sat, they put me in a leopard skin, really low cut top and leather jeans, and I was sat on the barrel. I mean, it was dead naive at the time. I didn't even know they were taking pictures of me knockers. I was so naive, honestly, I can't even tell you. There was a lot of chat like that around the time. But what my brother, and he didn't know in his own little way, he had no idea. And my brother's a really successful businessman. He's a great guy. And but we were living together. We'd always lived together. And before we met our partners, and I went back to our house and I said, have you seen this, to Chris? And he just went, well, he's a dickhead, isn't he? And I said, yeah. And he went, Sal, you're the barmaid of the Rovers. They could have had anyone. And I thought, yeah.
That's it. That's the right lens to put on that bullshit, right?
And they didn't. And I literally didn't think about it after that. And I haven't to this day.
Good.
Haven't to this day. I don't really talk about this a lot because I feel like, you know, every female, I talk to you obviously because you're amazing and you've been through so much with this. And it's really relevant on your podcast. And it's an honest way of talking about it. But I don't actually a lot with, especially with female journalists, because I just think you're asking this to perpetuate this myth.
Yeah.
And they'll pick this headline out and say, oh, I'm really happy in size 14. Why shouldn't I be? You know, it's my husband.
They wouldn't run that if you were a size 8 or 10.
No, I know. It's like it's some weird thing. It drives me, honestly, it drives me insane.
We have to talk about not talking about it. Isn't that just the biggest oxymoron ever? But we have to. It's important to put this out there. And I agree. It's about context and you're in a place where hopefully this is an intelligent conversation and we're wrapping that intelligence around it. I just hope it doesn't get, you know, what would leave me gutted, Sal, is if when this episode goes out, I see in some bloody woman's magazine that's completely anti-women, Sally Lindsay, I'm so happy at a 14 to 16. Like, that will just piss me off. Because what I want to see is Sally Lindsay is the Reese Witherspoon of the frickin' North, and more women like her need to be walking through this industry. That's the headline I'm taking away from this conversation.
That's so kind. It's so kind. It just drives you mad, though. It's just like, Steve, how many years has he been on, like, Cover and Enemy, Drummer magazines, Old Music Mag, you know all that.
Yeah.
And he's never once been asked about the size of his trousers.
Or his childcare. Sal, you know what? I could talk to you forever and a day. Oh. And thanks for letting me bang your drum a bit today. Because I know that it makes you almost have a rash. But people need to know how brilliant you are and the great work that you're creating, not just for you, but for other people as well, predominantly other women. And I bloody love you for that.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. And thank you. Congratulations on all of your successes as well.
Well, right back at you, sister. Posh Sleepovers is on Channel 5. The Madame Blanc Mysteries were on Channel 5. You can get them on Catch Up. They're also airing on Acorn TV. And in every pocket of the world, because it's been sold around the world, because my friend Sally wrote a show, appeared in it, sang the theme tune, wrote the shit. She didn't actually, she got her husband to do that. Yes. And she's absolutely smashing it, because if she didn't, nobody else was going to put it on a plate for her. Well done.
Thank you, my love. Thank you. It's very kind.
That's it for this week's White Wine Question Time. How lovely was that? What a great woman she is. Thank you very much to my guest, Sally Lindsay. As always, the show is produced by me, Kate Thornton, with Ben Robbins for Yahoo UK and the Yahoo Studios team. Andy Bell provides our beats. Don't forget, he's got a brand new album right now out, waiting for your listening pleasure. And we'll be back next Friday with more great chat. Until then, have a great weekend and take care out there.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Their meditations range to fit your needs each day, from anxiety and stress, relaxation and focus, to building habits and taking care of your physical well-being. They even have expert-led talks on topics such as tips for overcoming stress and anxiety, handling grief, improving self-esteem, caring for relationships, and more. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.